Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to our final episode of 2021. This week, we'll be sharing the best bits from our episodes this year. We're fortunate to have been able to interview some incredible tech professionals working in the Newcastle and Hunter region who have shared their stories, insights, and advice throughout their career. We hope you enjoy this episode.
During that 2.5 years, I transferred what I could to the University of Newcastle, and I started an undergrad in Com Finance. Mm-hmm. So that's my official undergrad is Com Finance, and I finished that up probably 2 or 3 years ago while we were sort of growing the business. So it's been a long haul. I think I've been at uni now
for most of your
most of my adult life.
Your working career,
my awakened life. it's coming. This is my 13th year, so I'm starting a master's in marketing at the moment.
So 13 years part time studying at university.
Yeah,
and, good on you.
And a business and a wife and two beautiful little girls. So it's been a big journey.
I think I've had two career changes in my career. So it's just, I think it's too much pressure for students, especially just to figure out what they want to do straight away out of high school.
Absolutely. And it's, you've got to be passionate about what you're doing, particularly at uni. I mean, uni teaches like technical skills, which is really good, but it also teaches you time management and how to control yourself. That's the biggest lessons I got out of that. So that's flowed into everything I do now. So,
And what advice would you give to students wanting to start a career in marketing or digital?
Yeah, digital marketing in particular, the curriculum's still pretty light at the uni. It's changing rapidly, but it's still pretty traditional. So I'd still say focus on traditional marketing. So everyone within our team at Zimple is a marketer first, and then we span off into our sort of...
You need the foundation and the fundamentals first, and that's just different, applying at a across different channels.
Different platforms. I mean, if you specialization is still recommended, like you can still need to...
So like SEO or...
Yeah, SEO, SEM, social media, content production. There's a whole range of areas that you go into, but... The output of those particular skills are only as good as the strategic thought that's gone into producing them.
Yes.
So, we always try and take a strategy-led approach based on objectives and then back that up with skills. So, anyone looking to start a career in digital, I'd say focus predominantly on the soft skills. So thinking, listening, being able to synthesize information and then put it onto paper and then, have you back up in the tactical execution of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And market research, obviously, because that's key if you're going to be helping your clients grow their businesses.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Zimple. So you've been steadily growing the business over the last several years, which is exciting, and you're a sort of full-service creative and digital agency based in Charlestown.
Yeah, so there's 18 of us now, which is great. Wow. So last year we moved into a new premises just above Rascals in Charlestown up in the New Corn development, which was pretty exciting. So we did a full fit out, and that was to accommodate the short-term and future growth of the company. We've hit the short-term growth already and we're looking to expand beyond that. Yeah. So, we've got a pretty diverse team up there and everything seems to be moving in the right direction, so we're pretty happy.
Good. And can you talk about some of those plans for growth at this point, and what are you going into other sort of areas or new client segments?
So traditionally our client base is businesses that are already sort of executing some marketing, but due to competitive pressures they need to sort of increase their digital presence in particular, and that's why they would come to us. What we've observed is the barriers to entry in business have lowered considerably off the back of you know, digital means of communicating with people. So
yeah.
Businesses that have been around for 20 or 30 years that have a great reputation, they've got plenty of word of mouth business, are starting to notice that their revenue is in decline due to all these upshoots. So that's where we come in.
And different channels people are
Well, it's very accessible. Yeah. You don't, in the past, you know, you'd put a billboard up, you'd run a radio campaign or you'd do some TVC, but now everyone seems to think they can put together a Facebook page and campaign and go for it.
On episode 59, Mitch Brindle. First, guys, I knew in the DevOps space, and obviously you've grown your career. For those that don't know who you are and your journey today, can you give people a bit of an overview?
Yeah, sure. All right. So I guess been in IT now for about 10 years. I originally started in traditional IT, so servers, help desk, networking, stuff like that. Moved up from Victoria, so first gig was a support tech at hospitals down there. Got a job up here at Calvary Healthcare, doing again more of that support orientated work. But then once I got a bit of more skills under me, I decided to step into the server networking infrastructure. First thing fell in love with was networking, anything Cisco at the time, that was me. I went and got some certs, etc. Then Calvary went through a transformation. So essentially I went from a support role to an engineering role, which then essentially catapulted that exposure to that tech space. So going from networking then to service to Citrix, everything. Once Calvary was being done, essentially I moved on to Australian Rail Track, which then the networking side just exploded. That's kind of where we managed our internal networking completely. We managed the actual track network as well. So that was huge exposure there. Once I had done everything that I could there, we then moved into NIB, and this is where the career just, you know, on its head. NIB was a place where they had a lot of that traditional infrastructure, but because they had a lot of development focus too, that's where the kind of shift from, you know, thinking around that tech stack to that more software stack happened. And I guess when in late 2015, so I joined NIB in 2015, they decided to go down the DevOps route. And the first iteration of that was essentially splitting off the infrastructure team with people who wanted to get more into scripting, more into programming, more into automation. And essentially, once that happened, I bit in hard on that. I thought that was fantastic. I was already into automation a bit, and because of like command line with networking, the command line wasn't too spooky. So I kind of gravitated to that side, more of the infrastructure side, and then went through that for a number of years now, been on that AWS journey, did migration area work, but then also lift and shift from on-prem to AWS, looking at any automation between those two environments as well. And then today, well, I actually, after that, I did leave NIB for a portion of time to go to ColoSL, fantastic time there, and that was to take an opportunity in the management space. That's where I want to take my career. And then NIB had an opportunity of a lifetime, which is essentially manage the team that I was in before. So my old peers were there still, and just working back in that tech space that I love. And obviously NIB is a great company too. So that's where I am today.
Nice, mate. From episode 60, Justin Bain. The people that don't know what it is, like I've walked into your offices in the warehouse there, and we're seeing, you know, big diggers and, you know, big mining machinery which have been retrofitted with batteries. Mate, for people that don't understand, can you give people a bit of an overview of what you guys sort of do in most layman terms?
Sounds good. I was going to delegate that answer to you and say, you know, when you came out to Cardiff, what did you see? What did you think? But yeah, that's right. We generally on the workshop floor have at least, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 different platforms undergoing various stages of integrations. So that may be a retrofit, so from a diesel platform over to full battery electric, which we do with our close vehicle OEM partners. And then we build batteries. We build batteries for the highest, deepest and toughest applications.
Yeah, right. Highest, deepest, toughest. So we're talking military. I know I'd seen like a little 4x4 vehicle that you were doing that was to be used in military as well as, you know, deep underground mining vehicles.
Yeah, so talking through the highest. So at the moment we're building batteries for a large eVTOL, a large cargo drone partner. And then talking deepest, underground mines has been a big focus of the company. Battery systems, battery electric vehicle systems for mining applications. And then in the marine sector, some projects are in the pipeline in that space as well.
Very
but
nice.
Yeah, toughest talking to the defence, military applications, a few projects on the books there from soldier system, battery systems through to electric vehicle systems.
Hey, we'll get to the office fit out, the warehouse fit out in a second because I was super impressed when I went out there. But for those that don't know where 3ME came from or how it come about, this, you know, startup to scale up journey, can you give people an overview?
Yeah, so the company has had a long history of research and development in the automotive electric vehicle space. And then I was approached around towards the end of 2017 by one of the investors in the company and said, hey, the company doing cool stuff, electric vehicle systems. We want to take it into the mines. We want to take it into the military and we want your help doing it.
Yeah, nice. You come from an army background, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Why is a guy like you approached to come and join this company?
Yeah, so I was an officer in the Army. I went through Duntroon, the Royal Military College down in Canberra. I was a signals officer initially. So I guess, you know, technical background in regards to that, but in a broad management perspective. I guess what officers in the Army do is problem solving, strategy, leadership, and yeah, blank sheet of paper for the business plan. Get on board, sort it out.
So we'll stay there for a sec. So the Army best set you up with that sort of the more leadership skills. Is that probably the best platform that the Army provided you for your career?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, definitely. Certainly from the human resources management perspective, you know, you manage small teams, large teams, you know, working in conjunction with foreign nationals, foreign militaries. So very broad leadership experience.
Yeah, nice. And then you've obviously been able to take some of those core skills and take them out from Army world into, you know, corporate world or startup world, which is obviously going through those growth pains as well that come along with startup to scale up.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the skills are very transferable. Yeah, I think you touched on it just then. Obviously, startup to scale up, you know, does require a lot of resilience, and that's certainly something that you pick up in your time in defence.
Yeah, cool. I think the other part as well is just that the having to wear many hats, right? You sort of made mention of it before in the Army. You're having to problem solve and, you know, look at different situations and probably play different parts within your role in different situations. And then you've obviously taken that to the startup world.
Yeah, definitely multiple hats when you're running a tech company. We've got a diverse workforce. I mean, we do a lot of engineering. We do the tech development. You know, we're progressing into production. Obviously, there's arms of, you know, getting cash in the door to keep the business on its fast trajectory. So it's very much a multi hat job.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear from my perspective. I interview a lot of tech professionals in particular, and you're obviously the CEO of a tech company now coming from that Army background. You're not the first, I don't think. I think I have one other guy on here that had that military background. But I think and he spoke very, very strongly of, again, leadership and team building as a, you know, core aspect. But it's definitely not the common path for the CEO of a tech startup.
Yeah, well, I think when you're in the military, you know, say as a troop commander, I mean, you're solving problems, you're pulling together a team to plan a mission, you know, whether it's more deliberately planned or whether it's a, you know, short notice type thing. But you're getting people together in a room with different capabilities, and you're solving a problem. And, you know, that's what we're doing at 3ME. We're solving problems.
Yeah. From episode 61, Ryan Priest.
What advice would you give to young people wanting to start a career in technology?
You
went all in and just tried to learn and absorb as much as you could.
Stay focused with what you're passionate about. It's very easy to sort of maybe get distracted. There's so many different avenues now. Like, yes. Back when I was young, it was like, if you're going to get an IT, it was a pretty clear path in a lot of ways. You know, you go do your Microsoft certs. I did all them. Did my ITIL certs, but it was very clear in the direction you could go. Now it's like you can be like a software dev, you can, you know, robotics, automation, like there's just so many different avenues.
Yeah, machine learning engineer.
Yeah. And I think it's just all about just like being focused, like just find out where your passions are. Like you got to do this. You're going to do this for a long time. Like your career, unless you hit the jackpot, which I've been trying to do, the Powerball, come on, baby. but chances of you winning that are pretty low. So you have to have a backup plan, and that would be probably a career, I guess. Uh-huh. And in your career, you know, you've got to find what you're passionate about. Otherwise, you're just wasting everyone's, not only your time, you're wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're going to get bored. You're just going to keep jumping between. And then you're going to get to like the ripe old age where you go, why didn't I just follow what I thought was interesting? Or why didn't I just spend my days waking up and actually look forward to going to work? And I'm definitely at that point. I love going to work.
Yeah.
I love the people I work for. I love what we're doing. I think I'm very blessed in a lot of ways. I'm not a religious person, but I'm definitely feel like, you know, the opportunities that I've had has been a result of me probably being quite vocal about what I want to do, but also just like knowing that I'm interested in something and chasing that. So I guess my advice to newcomers and people coming to the market is don't rush it by all means. Don't think you have to have like this clear path of what you want to do, because you're probably not going to work it out for about 5 years into your career, right?
Yeah.
And that's normal. Like it's more than normal. In fact, I'd probably encourage it. Like dabble in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But once you find something that really excites you, go and master it. Like go and do the best you can at it, because it's only going to benefit you in the long run. And you've got to have an end game, and your end game is to retire and spend time with your family or, you know, whatever it is.
I think there's just a lot of pressure on kids these days to have it figured out straight away.
I think that pressure is like always been there in some ways. It probably stems from both your parents and what the school expectations are and stuff. You do it, a lot of us did just go surfing during the day and don't worry about it. But look, don't take my advice and don't do that. Like
from episode 62, Daniel Pludek, what got you into technology to begin with?
Funnily enough, I started studying microbiology at university. Really enjoyed the maths and sciences. However, noticed there were no real jobs in Australia, and especially back then, the only real jobs are available overseas. When I started looking at other areas where I can apply the maths and science skill set, technology stood out. So roughly halfway through my second year, I changed my majors from microbiology to IT and finished off my degree with the IT focused, and then went on to honours in IT.
Nice. Out of university, where did that take you for first job out?
First job out was as a DBA for Aon. Absolutely hated the role. I just could not stand sitting at a desk all day looking at code and understand why figures were off by 0.0001. somewhere in a database. So I did that for about a year and then moved into a professional services role with EDS, where I was able to work on a much broader range of technologies.
Nice. Did that role also have any customer facing element?
It was customer facing, so I was based on customer site initially at Colonial Bank, helped with the technology merger when they were acquired by Commonwealth Bank. Through that contract, I was offered a full-time role with EDS, and that took me to Ericsson, General Motors, Commonwealth Bank, and then overseas, where I worked on Xerox transformation in Canada, which then led back to General Motors in Canada, and then roles across the US.
All right, I'm going to go into that US bit in one sec, but you just may mention something there. That purely technical role, moving into a role that's got a customer-facing element to it, My gut feel is the people I talk to that get those higher level positions up into the C-level management and then C-level positions in technology have that really strong people element and that communication part to what they do, as opposed to being purely technical. Do you think exposure to that in an early role for you helped in that growth?
I think you need to have a breadth of skills. Having the customer facing skill set does help with the growth, because it does teach you how to deal with different stakeholders and how to communicate with non-technical people. I found coming as an introvert and from a technical role, the ability to listen and understand helped a lot, especially in customer facing experiences. So I found even in my early roles, I'd inherit the problem customers because I'd sit and try to understand what their actual problem is and work through that problem with them, and that would normally turn them around. So I think, you know, technical or not, doesn't matter so much. It's being able to understand what is that problem you're trying to fix and then leverage what you have available to you as far as skills, experience, other people to be able to resolve that issue.
Yeah, and that's technology as a whole, right? It's an enabler, and the technology itself, whatever platform you're using, whatever code you're writing in, the bigger solution and, you know, what is that problem you're solving is the issue, right? On that note, what do you think the biggest skill that you would have had to learn from moving up that chain to getting C-level? Is there a skill in particular or a learning in particular that you think is most important?
I think the biggest learnings are, A, you have to be confident. If you're not confident in your ability to do something, nobody's going to be confident in you.
Yeah.
Listening is very, very important. So the more you listen, the more you understand. And if you understand, you can then address challenges and take on the work that other people don't want to do or can't do. So I find the biggest opportunities and the biggest jumps I've ever made has been taking on the problems that have been lingering for years, getting them fixed, which then drives that exposure. And I found it doesn't matter what role you start at in your organization, if you can fix their big problems, you'll move up quite quickly.
From episode 63, Aaron and Will told.
They have. Yeah, and this is something that, you know, it varies obviously by, you know, piece that we're working on. But we do use .NET fairly extensively because, like, starting at, you know, the hardware level, we have effectively a rover that's doing all the data logging for the mobile laser scanning. So it's like pulling the LiDAR information in. It's then timestamping the camera feed to the GPS, the same as the LiDAR, keeping the GPS and, you know, kind of really collating all that data. So that's all you done in .NET. We actually have like a Linux environment on a single board computer. And it used to be mono, but now we can run .NET Core, you know, even better. So we run that kind of at the coalface, essentially, like as we're capturing. And then we have, you know, normally something watching that there that is effectively just a GUI that's on a screen somewhere so the operators can actually see. Whether or not they actually look at it is another thing.
But it's there.
But it's there. Yeah. So, and then we pipe telemetry up to our web service and we're using .NET on the website as well.
From episode 64, David Lynch.
The audience that may not know what Minder is, can you explain what Minder product is?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And what your plans are?
Yeah, sure. Minder essentially is our hosted server solution. So it's essentially the cloud. A lot of people hear about the cloud, and that's what it is. I suppose behind all the smoke and mirrors, our data, our infrastructure sits in two data centers down in Sydney.
Yeah.
That are both replicated. So, you know, if one goes down for whatever reason, whether it's a power outage or whatever, all the data can swing across to another, to the other data center. Yeah. Yeah,
okay. So can you talk to us about some of the data centers that you've got in Sydney and the security around that? Because that's obviously a hot topic in the cloud infrastructure space.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so we're in the Equinix data centers down in Sydney. One based in Silverwater and one based in the city, and they've got their government grade type data centers, so they've got all sorts of security I suppose gates that you need to get through in order to go anywhere near the actual servers themselves. And they've got all the temperature controlled stuff, which a lot of those data centers necessarily do, but for us it was just that extra level of security that we wanted to be able to have.
Yeah, good. I watched the video on your website, so I saw big fans.
Yep.
That cool them down.
Yeah, there's massive generators, there's all sorts of things to make sure those things sort of stay up all the time. But as I mentioned before, so when if one was to go down for any particular reason, it's all backed up in our other site.
That's great.
And we have that ability just to ramp up our clients so that they have no sort of outages at all. So
Fantastic. Great. Okay. So so the Minder cloud infrastructure is one of your key products. Can you tell us about your plans for that? And there's some upgrade plans I believe.
Yeah, there is. So we've already done our first upgrade. We call it Minder 2.0. So it was funny because I just arrived at OAS, and I think I arrived in the February of 2020.
Yep.
And about 6 weeks later, that thing called COVID hit. And so I kind of...
ruined everyone's.
Yeah, it kind of was a bit tricky to navigate through that. But we got through it and, you know, the team were really supportive. So worked with an awesome team. Everybody just dug in. But at the same time, we were due to have an infrastructure upgrade. So we moved from a what they call a FlexPod system into a HyperFlex system with Cisco as well. So that upgrade was a sizable investment, and sort of in the middle of COVID, most people kind of bunker down and count their pennies and make sure that they're going to be able to get through. I suppose the guy's entrepreneurial type spirit came out, and they knew they had to upgrade.
Perfect time to do it.
Yeah, strategically it just made sense for us to do that. And we had a little bit of downtime. I wouldn't say a lot of downtime to be able to actually focus on that upgrade. So we've done that. And now we're at the stage where we've almost grown so much that we actually need to upgrade again.
Yeah, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, our storage and our capacities are starting to get the stage where we need to go again.
Yeah.
From episode 64. David Lynch.
Well, you've obviously, you know, been to a lot of different countries, and tell us about that experience with
Africa,
and that was just recently, obviously.
So last October, I was fortunate enough to head towards Africa. The story I tell is about on the way out of Africa, we had to have COVID tests done. Most of the airlines wanted to see proof of a COVID test before they would board you.
Yeah.
You can imagine what the airlines system's like in the middle of a pandemic. It's masks and separation and everything else going on.
Were you nervous about flying in a full plane? Was it the plane?
The planes were empty.
Really?
Empty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how they're making money. Yeah. I really, really don't. But yeah, it was a nice time to fly. Like, you weren't crowded and food services were prompt, and because the plane was empty, so it was a good time to fly. Apart from, you know, the global pandemic risk element. But yeah, on the way out of Mali, we had to stop for our COVID test in Bamako City. So we arrived at the airport and got into a minibus and were, you know, shuttled into the hotel, and you got to have a really good look at the city and other countries, and again, that whole healthy appreciation for here and home. That capital, Bamako, there's a lot of tin sheds. You know, the main roads are tarred and all the side streets aren't. All the basics that we have here, you know, sanitation and garbage collection, it's there, but it struggles. Choked roadways with people on scooters and, you know, people sitting in the backs of utes to get where they're going and all that sort of stuff. But they put us into a hotel for a couple of days. It's in the nice part of town, in the embassy district. All tarred roads everywhere there. And I'll never forget, came around the corner and there's this little concrete bridge over a muddy-looking creek. And the bus pulled up on that as the gates in front of the bridge opened, and they had razor wire on top of them. And the gates opened and out came an armed guard. And at that point, you sort of realise there was another armed guard sitting in a hut off to the side. And then out came another two, one with a mirror on a stick looking under the car, and another one with a bomb sniffer dog who did a lap of the car.
Guilty of anything, you'd still be nervous. That's
right. Exactly right. I haven't got any sunscreen that smells like explosives. And at that point, we were rattling from the amount of medication we'd had for anti-malarials and stuff as well. But they circled the car and that was okay. And they drove the car and shut the gate behind. There was an inner gate in front of it. They got us all out and the sniffer dog sniffed us all over. And then we all walked into an airport security hut. So x-ray machine, wands, and then the bag x-ray.
They would have had quite big machine guns, I imagine.
Yeah, they weren't playing. So then you get through that, you put your bag through, and then you walk out of all of that and you're into this courtyard of a hotel with flowers and fountains and music playing, and you've stepped into a different world.
Parallel universe.
Yeah.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. As always, you can find all our show notes on our website, www.nuitechpeople.com.au. From the team here at Nui Tech People, we wish you a Merry Christmas. Hope you have a relaxing break with your loved ones. We'll be back in the new year, hopefully with some more face-to-face interviews with Newcastle Tech professionals.